everybody, and welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, us. It's Ariel and
Peachy Raylene.
Peachy Raylene is back. Now, she's not just peachy because of her hair. She's also peachy because of that wonderful peachy hat she's wearing. Available now online at the link below. We have released a peachy hat. It has the little book illustration that I drew for all of our hats a while ago. We've brought it back onto this hat. Raylene, how about you give us a little review as someone who's currently wearing it on their head?
Yes, I just put it on for the first time about half an hour ago, and it feels tight and snug, which I always love for a new toque. But the color is fantastic. I was a little worried it was going to be too orange, but it definitely feels like peach. And it's great. I think it goes really great with my hair. I was also worried it would be a little too much peach, but because it's really vibrant, so my dull peach hair kind of balances it out in a nice way.
Yeah. For people who are curious about color, because color is always difficult, it does skew orange as opposed to pink. Mm. If you're like, I want a pink peach, it's more orange peach.
Definitely.
But I do think because it's a heathered color, like it's got a lot of specks of a lighter color in there, it makes it look more peachy.
Mm-hmm. I think we nailed it.
But yeah, we're really happy with it. It's available now. Celebrate our peachy year with us with the peachy hat. All right, next. Today we have a lot to talk about. So I literally have made them all like checklist to-do lists on my notes. So I'm checking off hat. Good job, everyone. We nailed that. Next up, I need to talk about tea.
Oh, yeah.
I need to talk about tea because last week I did a whole segment, right? I talked about the biscuit tea, which has been my favorite tea for over a year now since I tried it at my friend Kaylee's house. Kaylee introduced me to the tea, changed my mind. All I do is buy this tea. I have to buy it online because I can't find it. One interesting development is that somebody in our Discord, and I unfortunately forget his name, but when the time comes, I will look his name back up. He let me know that there is a British shop in Halifax.
Oh, I saw that comment, yeah.
That sells a lot of teas, but also the biscuit tea. Perfect. But I quickly looked it up, saw all these sick photos of it. It's like, you know, a little grocery store, but with imported goods from, I don't remember if it's all of the UK or just England, but it looks so exciting.
Oh my gosh.
Because I don't know. All of those things bring me so much nostalgia and joy. Yeah. And so I'm definitely going to have to go there. But the thing I wanted to review today was because of this comment that I got on the Discord. I was going to save this for the mailroom, but I think it makes more sense here. Olivia said, Ariel, this was from YouTube. Olivia C712, Ariel. When you're next in the UK, you should try Bird and Blend tea, if you haven't already, for the chocolate digestive tea. So mine is the digestive tea from Yorkshire. This is the chocolate digestive from Bird and Blend. They have a gorgeous cream egg tea at the moment too, which I'm obsessed with. They also ship internationally. Well, I own that tea.
Of course.
I own the chocolate digestive Bird and Blend tea. I bought this, I think I bought it at the London Borough location, and it's been ages. So I got so excited about this when I saw it in the shop. Mm. Bought it, came home, made it, instantly disappointed. Instant disappointment. Never had it again. Just honestly forgot about it.
Yeah.
And then I saw this comment from Olivia and I was like, wait, don't I own that? And I went to my drawer and I found it. So I have made it in my Stonehenge mug.
I'm trying to lean into the British. Is this going to be the first sip?
This is going to be the first sip in years. Like, I don't remember what it tastes like.
Oh, my God.
It smells really good. Like, it smells chocolatey and digestive-y. Okay, here we go. I think it's also at the perfect temperature now.
Drink up.
Mm. You not see, like it falls flat. It falls flat. It falls flat of the chocolate and of the digestive. It's not by any means bad. It's good tea. But once you've tried the digestive biscuit tea that I love, you just can't go back. I don't feel like it's like an artificial chocolate.
Ew.
Do you know what I... No, but it's not. It says cocoa nibs and cocoa shells. But you know what? Yeah. You know what, Raylene? In the ingredients, it says licorice.
Ew.
I don't like licorice.
I hate licorice.
I am not a licorice fan. And that might be what's going on here.
That could be it. Because like, it's tainted by the licorice.
It's painted by the licorice. And I wouldn't, if I had tasted this, I don't think I would have guessed that there was licorice in there. But once you tell it to me, I'm like, oh, actually, yeah, it undercuts it with this little bit of a, it's not sour. Licorice isn't sour, but it's like.
Just bad flavor.
Nasty. So unfortunately, Olivia, I'm not a fan of the chocolate digestive tea, but that was a fun little segment. And also, it was important for me to say this. Last week, I came down pretty hard on the toast and jam tea, right?
Yeah.
I was like, it doesn't taste like toast. It doesn't taste like jam. I want to say I fully stand by that statement. It doesn't taste like toast and it doesn't taste like jam. However, I can't stop drinking it. I know.
She loves it.
I'm really enjoying it, but it's like not what it says on the tin.
Right.
But it is really good. So I'll just check off tea review on my to-do list now. Nailed that one as well. Next up, we need to talk to you about some parties. It's become an interesting running theme that we are constantly apparently hosting parties between the two of us.
I know.
And I hosted a really fun party last weekend. You hosted a really fun party this weekend. So we wanted to share that with you. How about you start us off, Raylene? What was your party? And
yes.
How did it go?
So I have kind of teased it a little bit. I talked about my good friend Julia. It was her birthday a week and a bit ago now. And we hosted a Twin Peaks themed party for her because Twin Peaks is her favorite show. And I've known this for as long as I've known her, and you know, maybe 6 years ago or something, she was like, you should watch Twin Peaks, it's my favorite show. I tried watching it. I think I watched 1.5 episodes and was like, nah,
nope,
it's not for me. And she ever since then has just been like kind of disappointed in that. Like, she really wants me to have seen it. And then my other friend Rebecca, who was the other person at the party, we always have parties with just three of us, so I don't know if you can call that a party, but that's what we do.
It's definitely a party.
So back in the day, Rebecca and Julia both were like obsessed with Twin Peaks. Like, Julia rewatched it while Rebecca was watching it. They were super into it, and I was just kind of like third wheeling, like, I don't like this show. And so for this party, I thought it would be an extra gift to Julia if I actually watched the show. And so I watched a season and a half. I couldn't make it past the second half of season two.
Season two falls apart.
I did not like season two, but it does finish the main storyline. So I had to finish it. Whatever. I watched Twin Peaks. So that was another thing I did. But the party itself was so fun because we set up kind of a Clue style puzzle game where we hand painted a whole bunch of little Clue cards with characters and then locations, and then we had sealed up two of them in a little bag that I hid in my backyard, and basically Julia had to like find her way through the house and find all the different puzzle pieces and then figure out who was the murderer. And so it was a lot of fun. We had really good food. Like, it's all simple for Twin Peaks. We just had like a baguette and brie and like coffee and cherry pie, so it was really easy in terms of the food, so that was nice. But the party itself was kind of complex and had a lot of emergency crafting, so I'm glad that it's over now because it was a lot, but it was lots of fun. What about your
party? Okay, my party was awesome. It was, quite frankly, a big success. Very happy with how it went. It was definitely a co-hosting affair. So my brother was co-hosting this party with his friend. Because of just life, it got moved a couple times. Like, it was going to happen two months ago, and then it got moved to a month later, and then it got moved to now. Because of all of that shuffling, it moved locations. It was originally going to happen in a different apartment, and then a different apartment. At the beginning of April, CJ, my boyfriend, my fiance, and me, we all moved in to a new apartment together in Halifax. So I still live, and Connor still, I get this question all the time. We still live in my house full time, but whenever we go into Halifax, which is semi-regularly, it's really nice to have a place to stay. So we're splitting this place with my brother. So anyway, we kind of became a housewarming party. Mm. And so because of that, me and Connor helped co-host it as well. So there was like a lot of people organizing this thing, but that actually is what made it so awesome. And we've like learned a lot from this experience because it was kind of like everyone was in charge of a different segment.
Oh yeah.
Of this party. And so everyone really did a great job at their segment. So it was a Hot Ones party. If you watch Hot Ones on YouTube, you know what this is. If you don't, it is a an incredible, it's fantastic show, an interviewing show. It's a normal show where you have a host, Sean Evans, our favorite Sean Evans. And he interviews a celebrity guest, and it's just a normal interview, like he asks them questions. But the twist is that they're eating progressively spicier and spicier wings as the episode goes on. Mm-hmm. And it's fun because they become more and more unhinged as it goes, and the questions become more and more like loosely interpreted, and it's such a great setup for a show.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And so my brother loves spicy food. His friend loves spicy food. This is why they wanted to do the Hot Ones party. I don't eat spicy food. I don't like spicy food. It's just painful to me. Like, it's like you take a great plate of food and then you add pain. I don't taste the flavors that apparently people are tasting. Like, it's just painful. So, but I was like, I'll still lean into this party. So I had my kind of thing that I really focused on was twofold. First, I did the cool down zone. So I bought chocolate milk, yogurt tubes. I got really obsessed with buying a lot of yogurt tubes. That seemed fun to me. And there's a bunch of things so that when people were having too much spice, they could try and cool down. And then I also bought like 8 bags of spicy chips, like Flamin' Hot
spice Cheetos.
There was spice everywhere. And so that was like another station. And my brother was in charge of the wings. He cooked all of the wings throughout the night. And there was like 25 people there. So we were making he was making an absurd amount of wings. And also we had vegetarian wings. And so people were, somebody brought an air fryer just for the veggie wings so that we could be cooking them simultaneously, but separately. So we had a blast. It was so much fun. Basically what we ended up doing, logistically this worked really well, because originally we were going to toss them all in each sauce, but we realized it's so much better to just make all the wings, everyone grabs one and then dips it in. We had little bowls for each sauce, dips it in the sauce, and then we all stood in a big circle and we were like, 3, 2, 1, eat. The amazing thing is that I made it to wing 7. I don't know you know how like in the Olympics 100 years ago were so much slower, but the spirit of competition, camaraderie, and world record ship makes everyone go faster and faster every year somehow.
Yeah.
I think that's what was happening. I was in a room full of experts and I was like, I've got to try and keep up. And it pushed me farther than I think I would have ever gone on my own.
That's amazing.
It was so much fun. The other huge thing was, CJ's friend who was co-hosting had organized a mini game in between every wing.
Oh, what kind of mini games?
So yeah, they were super fun. Like, we did flip cup, which was cute. And we did this one game where like the cups are on either side of a space, and then you have a balloon and you have to like blow the balloon to fill up the space in the cup and then carry that cup over and stack it back and forth with
that
a teammate.
That is crazy. I love it.
It was really fun. There was also like pin the tail on the donkey, but with Chili's and Sean Evans.
Oh my God. That's beautiful.
So, classic party games, but all with a chili twist.
Yes, of course.
So I was really proud of the party. I feel like everyone really nailed their segment. Like, CJ's wing production was perfect. Mm-hmm. Constantly the wings were coming at the right moment. Xander's games were perfect. He was constantly like, okay, now we're doing this game. And his girlfriend Alex was also like really in charge of the games, and she was constantly like really on top of making sure everyone understood the rules, and I was like offering drinks to people all of the time. So it felt like a really beautifully run event.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like I like Frank's Red Hot Sauce now.
Ooh.
Which can't be right. I'm like, is that an illusion? I'm scared to try it again after 29 years of avoiding spice.
Yeah.
Like, it feels
like
weird
just
to
a little bit
it.
Of mild spice might be nice every here and there.
Maybe. Who am I? So there you go. It was a fun party. And yeah, it was a great time.
That's awesome.
Okay, we were gone for 2 weeks, sort of. We took a week off. In that week off, what did you get up to, really?
Oh my God.
Other than the party, of course.
Yeah.
Anything that you wanted to highlight?
I didn't do too much. Like, honestly, last weekend I spent most of my Sunday recording an audiobook, which is a book that I finished. So I'll talk about that in a little bit. But It took a long time because, well, the book is The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells. And this book came out in the 1800s. So there's lots of like weird words and stuff. So it took me a long time because of like looking up how to pronounce things and like whatever. But it was lots of fun. Like, I'm glad that I finished it. So that'll be, you know, it's in post-production right now. It'll come out soonish. I still have to finish editing it. But that was a big thing that I feel like happy to have off my plate. But then other than that, to kind of balance out the work and play throughout the weekend and the following week, I have been playing a lot of Stardew. Like, a lot of Stardew. So you and I started a farm a week or two ago. And but that's not the only farm I have going on right now. I actually have four different farms happening right now. Ever since the update came out, I started one by myself, one with Kyle, one with you, and then one with my friends Rebecca and Julia. The day after the party, we played for 4 hours. we all had our laptops and we all played Stardew. So I've been doing that quite a lot because also my regular job work has been like really, really busy lately. And so I've just been like, I just need to play games. So
totally.
That's pretty much what I've been doing. I've been working and playing lots of Stardew. So, although the weather has also been really nice the past few days, so I've been sitting outside and reading, which I'm really excited about for spring and summer to kind of start rolling around so I can do that more. And I put sunscreen on, but I missed one little patch on my arm, so I have a weird red patch on my arm now. So that's fun. That's my fun update for going outside. Be very careful when you go outside, people. But that's it. Nothing that's too exciting.
Well, I went and saw The Eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely want to talk to you guys about this because it was one of the most insane things I've ever seen.
Ooh.
So I knew that this eclipse was happening like 2 years ago or something because I follow a lot of science YouTubers like Hank Green and stuff. And they are like mentioning it, like this thing is coming. You're going to want to see it. And so like a year ago, I said to my brother and to Connor, like, I really want to go see this eclipse. I think it's going to be really cool. And we're really lucky because we're only a few hours. Like, we live in Nova Scotia. It was going to happen in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. It was going to be in the path of full totality. And so we're like, we're only a couple hours away. Like, we could drive over and see it and it would be awesome.
Yeah.
And so we were like, this is a great idea. And then CJ, we got two of CJ's best friends in on the plan. So we were like, okay, we're going to do this thing. We also decided to kind of combo this trip with experiencing New Brunswick. Because we all of us, apart from one person who like was born and raised in Nova Scotia, so she has been to New Brunswick a few times, but none of us other ones have like really knew much about New Brunswick. So we're like, let's kind of explore New Brunswick and then end with the eclipse. So we spent the first day in Moncton, where we did a bunch of fun, cute things. Like, we went to Magnetic Hill, which is this like optical illusion. where you like drive to the bottom of this hill.
Yeah.
Then you put your car in neutral or turn it off. And then it feels like you roll up the hill. Whoa. It's honestly, it was impressive. We were all like, okay, yeah. We were worried that it was going to be a little bit like fake. Not fake, but like gimmicky and like, okay, maybe this would have been fun for a child, but for us, it's really not. But it really actually did feel like we were rolling uphill. The car was off, though. It was weird. It was really fun. So we had a fun time. We also had, oh my God, one of the best meals of our lives at a restaurant called Gusto, an Italian restaurant. Unbelievable. If you're in Moncton, go to Gusto. It was awesome. The next day, we went to St. John. Beautiful town. Probably my favorite of the three towns that we went to. It was just really, really beautiful. We also did a big nature walk that day, and it was just stunning. But it was Sunday, so everything was closed, and it was a little bit of a ghost town, but we still had a lot of fun.
It's a vibe.
And then the final day we went to Fredericton, which is where the eclipse was happening. And we had our eclipse glasses and we were all being really careful about it, like really intensely careful about it. Cause we, you know, you're supposed to be. As the eclipse starts happening, it was starting to get darker throughout the day, but very slowly.
Yeah.
And I was starting to worry that I had dragged all of these people to New Brunswick for no reason, because I was like, you know, actually how impressive can this even be? Yeah. Actually, I don't, now I'm worried. And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, even if this eclipse thing is kind of a dud, like an anticlimax, this was still a fun weekend. Like, we had a lot of fun, so it's totally fine. It's fine. I'm looking at the sun with the glasses, and the final moments, people are starting to freak out. Like, we were there with hundreds of people, right? We were next to a river, but we were in town, so there was, like, hundreds of people that were out to see this. I'm looking at the sun with my glasses, and I'm seeing the very last moments of the sun as it is covered.
Yeah.
And then it's in full totality, and that's when you're allowed to take your glasses off. I take my glasses off. At the same moment, my four friends are behind me facing the other way because they were looking at the river, how it was getting completely dark.
Whoa.
Right? So they're like, Ariel, you've got to see this. You've got to see this. But I'm looking up at the sun. And I take my glasses off and I actually screamed. I couldn't control it, but everyone was screaming.
Yeah.
And I was like, you guys have to see. And they all turned around and lowered their glasses. And then they all started screaming.
Yeah.
And we were like, what is going on? I know that everyone makes like a cheesy thing of like how it is like a spiritual experience. It actually was like a spiritual experience. Because I think it's because you look up at the sky every day and you only really see three things. You see it rainy, so it's cloudy, you see it sunny, or you see it dark because it's night. Like those are the three things that we have basically. Looking up at the sun and it's an actual black hole, Raylene, it was just
That's
a black
so cool.
disc in the sky surrounded by white fire flame. You're like, it was absurd. And it was so short. It was 3 minutes, I think, we had of pure totality. And we're all freaking out. Or 2.5 minutes. Like, we're freaking out. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. It was also the weirdest type of lighting that I've ever experienced. Because everyone's like, it's going to feel just like dusk. It did not feel like dusk.
Whoa.
It was still so bright. Like, it was still so clear. You could see everything. All the details were really clear and crisp.
Creepy.
And everything was very clear. But it was dark.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, very ambient light, but very dark. It was
unreal. Like, all of it.
It was just unreal. It felt so sci-fi to look into the sky and see this, like, basically, like, an alien thing. Like, a spaceship thing. It was unreal. And then, just as quick as it happened, it faded off. And the sun started to shine back out again. And we're all like, and we're just supposed to move on with our lives now? Like,
what time of day did it happen at?
It was 4:30 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
PM.
So definitely full daylight still.
Oh, my God.
So cool.
It was nuts. Wow. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
I'm so glad you got to experience that. Yeah, me too. And I really, there are more coming. Like, I think there's another one in 20 years. Like, I recommend people go and see that.
Set a reminder. I want to go to that, wherever it is.
Yeah. I think it's in the southern United States. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's so cool.
The other fun thing that happened, I went to a new bookshop. So let's transition and do a little book haul. All right. Let's talk books.
Yes.
And specifically, let's talk book hauls.
Mm.
For some reason, the way I said it made me think H-A-L-L-S. What would a book haul be?
The hauls of books.
So I went to the Westminster Books bookshop in Fredericton. I wanted to go to bookshops in the other two towns, but either they didn't have a bookshop. It was crazy. They either didn't have bookshops or one of them had a bookshop, but it was closed on Sunday.
Oh, no.
And I was like,
yeah.
Okay.
These things happen.
If you say so. But I did go to Westminster Books and I got some books. So I'll share those with you. The first one that I got was Cocktail by Lisa Alward. Alward? I'm not too sure about that one. So I went up to the bookseller. I'd been walking around for a while looking at stuff. Nothing had really caught my eye. So I went up to the bookseller there, Dominique. Hello, Dominique. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, do you have any recommendations for like a favorite book? From a local author.
Ooh.
And she was like, oh, yes. Do you like poetry? I was like, I do like poetry, but I'm not in a poetry mood right now. And she was like, okay, I know a short story collection. And I was like, actually, that's kind of perfect. I'm feeling like I'm subtly reading a lot of short story collections this year. So Lisa Alward, this is cool. So she grew up in Halifax, worked in publishing in Toronto, then moved with her family to Vancouver and ultimately to Fredericton, where she lives with her husband, John. This is her first collection.
Nice.
So, so she lives in Fredericton, which is where I bought the book, which is cute. And it's a short story collection. And I just trusted her and I bought it. I'm realizing now I have no idea what's going on.
These things happen.
A girl receives a bedtime visit from a drunken party guest who will haunt her fantasies for years. Whoa, that sounds scary. Mm. A young mother discovers underneath the wallpaper a striking portrait that awakens inconvenient desires. A divorced man distracts himself from the mess he's made by flirting with a stranger. Classic. It's a classic version of what a short story collection synopsis is right. Like. It's like these tantalizing little tidbits.
Yeah.
Set in the swinging 60s. Ooh. And each decade since, Cocktail reveals the schism between the lives we built up around us and our deepest hidden selves.
Oh, that sounds cool.
So that seemed cool. So I went to go buy that one, Raylene. And then, ha ha ha, very funny, I saw these two little tiny books at the checkout. And I was like, ooh, and I'll add this. Ooh, and I'll add this.
Uh-oh.
So I got this little pamphlet, George Orwell's Fascism and Democracy. I have other pamphlets of his that they've published, and I just think that they're so beautiful, and I just like having them for my Orwell collection. That's cool. I actually think I've read the essays in here even, but that's fine. And then the other thing was Kew Gardens, a short story set in the Kew Botanic Gardens by Virginia Woolf. So the Kew Gardens are just these beautiful, massive gardens and conservatories and everything in London. And I've been there before, so stunning, and I really want to go back this next time that I go to England. And I saw this there, and I was like, yeah,
I'll just throw that in the cart.
So I go, yeah, just, you know what, add to cart. So I got those three. I'm excited about them. What about you, Raylene?
Yes, well, as we'll get to when I talk about what books I've finished, I have kind of gone into a new zone of a subcategory of books that I think will be one of my big things at the end of the year, potentially. So what that thing is I'm now obsessed with reading books about the 60s and 70s, or set in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. As we knew this was going to happen, I read a book and it changed me, as I thought it might. So what I did is I kind of went on a little bit of a rabbit hole of searching for different books. So I've added a lot of books to my list, but I've only actually bought a couple so far. So the first one is one that actually I was planning on getting before this 70s thing even happened, but I got Interview with the Vampire by Anne Rice, which was published in the 70s. I didn't realize that when I got it, but my friends and I were talking about this, and I don't remember why, but we were like, this would be a great book for us to read for our little book club. Let's get that book. And so I just said to myself, if I happen across it, I will buy it. And they just happened to have this beautiful trade paperback edition, like a nice new edition. This is an old book. I was worried that it was going to be a really old, ugly copy, but I found this beautiful copy. And I don't know that much about it either, but I mean, it's The Confessions of a Vampire. Apparently it's kind of like luscious and maybe a little erotic because it is Anne Rice and she's known for that. So I'm really excited for that.
Have you seen the movie version?
No, I haven't seen anything. I know there's a TV show adaptation that's like happening now as well. But no, I've never seen it. And it's funny, I was actually watching a video with Kirsten Dunst recently, and she was talking about, she was in the movie version of Interview with the Vampire when she was a kid, which I didn't even realize. So now I'm like, I'm fully excited about this, but it feels like the wrong season to read it. So I probably won't be reading it anytime soon, but maybe that's this true. Fall. But then on the list that I was looking at, there was a bunch of really cool sounding books, and my local used bookstore happened to have one of them, weirdly. And that book is Looking for Mr. Goodbar by Judith Rossner. So this one sounds so up my alley. So this one, I can't remember what year it was published, but it was published in the 70s as well. And it's actually a little bit based on something true that happened. So the main character is a woman who is kind of an uptight, like school teacher. She's very conservative, has led a very sheltered life. And she kind of wants to change that, I guess, and just like goes out kind of into the nightlife side of things and starts doing more wild things with her life, and she actually ends up getting murdered. And so and this is based on true events, so it's kind of like spooky but also like cool. I don't know, it's like I'm kind of like I don't know what to think about it. I don't know anything about the book really, but it sounds really interesting and cool. It's like got a true crime aspect, which I'm obviously into. And then the last book I got, this one was kind of random and I just happened to pick it up when I went to go pick up that last book, but I got this one because of a comment in our Discord. So this is going out to Olive, who, and I'll just read it to you and you'll be intrigued to see what book I got here. So Olive says, I'm reading Down and Out in Paris and London, and I'm only a third of the way in, but I think it could actually make a good buddy read for you guys. Points for Ariel because it's Orwell, and points for Raylene because it's a significant chunk of the book so far has been about Orwell's chaotic time working in a French restaurant, so it feels food memoir adjacent. And so I picked it up. So I now own this, and I do think it could be a fun buddy read, because I know this is one you've been meaning to read for a while now, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of been pushed aside a couple of times, but I'm like, ooh, I'm excited about that. So, yeah, it was fun to add another Orwell to my shelf. It's been a long time for me. I've only read Animal Farm and 1984, and it's been like a decade. So I'm like, yeah, I'm ready for some more Orwell.
That's kind of cool that we both bought little Orwells.
Yeah, that's true. I know. I was especially excited when I saw that you had that.
Amazing. Let's talk maybe about what we've read. Mm. Okay, let's talk accomplishments.
I think I did some good work.
Oh, really? Interesting. All right, well, you should start us off then. What did you do?
Okay, well, I finished 3 books.
Whoa!
How many books did you finish?
2.
Ah! To be fair, one of them I was already halfway through. That was the audiobook. But I'll start with the book that has kind of sent me on this journey of reading about the 60s and 70s, because it's just so great. So the first book I finished reading is Slow Days, Fast Company, The World, the Flesh, and L.A. by Eve Babbitts. Eve Babbitts was born in Hollywood, California in 1943 and died there in 2021 at the age of 78. She was an artist and writer who first gained notoriety at the age of 20 through an iconic photo of her, nude, playing chess with the artist Marcel Duchamp. Her career mainly consisted of designing album covers for musical artists, but now she is most widely known for her works of fiction and semi-fictionalized memoirs about Los Angeles. She has 8 published works, the first one being Eve's Hollywood, which was published in 1974. Slow Days, Fast Company was her second book. I loved this book.
What an interesting reason that she blew up.
I know, right?
And also, what a 1960s thing. Like, 60s in the art world is just everyone standing naked in an art gallery doing something weird.
I know.
That's the 60s.
I know. So, and like, the thing about the photo is talked about very briefly in the book, but I like looked it up after and I'm like, yeah, this is so weird. Like, this guy fully dressed, just playing chess with a young woman nude. Like, why did that happen? But that's what she got her start, and then she became a really cool artist because of it. So I guess, you know, you win some, you lose some. But I really loved this, and while I was reading it, I was kind of like a little bit confused, because I didn't know. I thought it was just like straight memoir, but a lot of her books are kind of like blurring the lines between memoir and fiction a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of those. So Eve's Hollywood is her first book, and she, in this book, she's kind of like talking about, oh yeah, my first book came out, and everybody was kind of like, couldn't believe it because of what it's about. They couldn't believe that they let me publish that and stuff. So she does like talk about real things, but kind of in a vague kind of way. Like, she doesn't talk about the title of the book. Her name is never mentioned once in this book. Like, when people refer to her, like, she's just a nameless kind of main character, which I thought was really cool. And like, she, you know, she has names for people in the book, but they're all kind of vague. And so she's like, oh yeah, that guy who did that cool thing or whatever. And so I really like that. It's all kind of just like cool and stylish, and it's 1970s. And I really loved it, though. And it's funny because I don't really care about L.A. as a place. Like, it's not a place that I'm like, oh, wow, that's such a wonderful city that I want to travel to all the time. Like, I've been there multiple times, but it's not something I'm not interested in. But this book made me love L.A. Like, this book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like, because the whole book is her just like kind of chilling out, hanging out with her friends, and just like just vibing in L.A. in the 70s. And like, that's what pretty much what the whole book is. Like, nothing much really happens. It's mostly just like observations about people and about the places she goes to. And it just really puts you there. Like, it's the sort of the way that The Great Gatsby like just screams 1920s New York. Like, this screams amazing 1970s L.A. And it was so cool. And it felt so cool to be in that world for a little while. But her writing is also so good. Like, while I was reading it, I kept just being kind of blown away by the way she puts words together, and like in such a simple way. But it kind of reminded me of Chanel Miller a little bit. Know My Name, like a totally different ends of the spectrum, but like, she's so funny and like precise, and like her observational skills about like people and things is just like so sharp she writes about it, it's just like, whoa. Like, even if you can't relate to what she's saying, like, you fully understand what she means, kind of. Like, she just has such a good way of writing, and it just blew me away. So
that's so
this
cool.
100% has become a new favorite of mine, like, of the year. It's one of the 2 best books I've read so far this year. And I just want more stuff like this, and so I'm on the hunt to find more of her books, but I'm also just looking for more books that have a similar kind of vibe. So if anybody has any recommendations, please please do tell me.
That's so cool. Yeah. I own Black Swans by her, which I think is a short story collection. Yeah. So that makes me want to read that on my ongoing mission to see if I like short stories.
I'd be really
curious
to see what her short stories are like.
Yeah.
Because this kind of felt like short stories, but like also memoir in a way. So it was...
I'm so glad that you liked it. That's sick.
Yeah.
Should we go back and forth?
Yeah, let's go back and forth because I've got two more books to talk about.
The first book that I read in this period was Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. John Steinbeck was born in 1902 in Salinas, California. In his early life, he worked on ranches and farms as a manual laborer while he established himself as a writer. He is most known for his novels that depict the working class lives of migratory farm workers during the Great Depression. The Grapes of Wrath won both the National Book Award and the Pulitzer Prize in 1939. John Steinbeck received the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1962, and in 1964, he was presented with the United States Medal of Freedom by President Lyndon B. Johnson. Of Mice and Men was published in 1937. So, this is my first John Steinbeck.
Wait, really?
Which feels... Isn't that crazy?
Oh my gosh, I thought you had read that already.
No, I've never read this.
That's awesome.
So I have been sort of meaning to read this for, 11 years, because the reason that I have this edition is very specific. When I was living in Honduras in 2012, 2013, I didn't have access to books because there was not very many bookshops, and only one bookshop that I knew had English books, and the English books in that section were very limited.
Yeah.
And so my dad would travel back to Canada every few months for work. And so I would give him a list of books that I wanted, and he would get them for me, and then he'd come back. And so I had asked for Of Mice and Men, and he brought me back this edition.
Awesome.
What's funny is, like, at the time I hated it. I was like, oh, it's such an ugly little edition of the book. I knew that there was, like, really pretty ones and stuff, but over the years I've really bonded with this dorky little edition of the book. So now I would never get rid of it, but because I also just imagine my dad going into a bookshop, buying it for me, and then putting it in his suitcase to bring, like, it was crazy that I was asking for so many books, and he was I don't think I ever thought about it until now, how much suitcase room I was taking up for my dad. But anyways, it's been sitting on my shelves ever since. And it got chosen as the next book for the little book club that I'm doing with my brother, my fiance, and my brother's two best friends. So I kind of knew what to expect. I was about to say I didn't know what to expect. That's not true at all. John Steinbeck is so famous, and everything about his books is so famous. And although I hadn't read him, I've studied about him in my degrees and stuff, so I knew a lot about him. I knew that he was the reason that when he was one of the big writers of the Great Depression and everything, but I loved it. Like, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was so fascinating. One of the things that was really interesting was that he made up this new type of book that he called a play novelette.
Oh.
Never caught on. nobody else ever wrote a play novelette. But I respected it. I really respected it. So basically his idea was you could read it as a novel, but you could also perform it as a play.
Okay.
With very little change to either one.
Yeah.
And so what struck me as I was reading it, I was like, there's a lot of dialogue. Like, this thing is basically all dialogue. Yeah, and then looking it up, now I see why. It's because it's a play novelette. It was so stripped back. It's so short. Again, this is one of those things where you're like, why haven't I read this? It's only 107 pages long. But it was so stripped back. It was so simple. It's the story of two men who are migratory farm hands, and they're just going from farm to farm in California trying to get work. One of them is they don't really describe exactly what his situation is, but he needs a lot of help, and kind of the other guy is sort of in charge of him. He's like his friend, but also kind of takes care of him and helps him. And so that one causes a lot of trouble, and then everyone has to deal with it. And it's so unbelievably sad. The ending is so unbelievably sad. And throughout the whole book, there's a real sense of dread. There was never a point where I was like, this is gonna end well. I was like, no, no, this is going to end in a tragic, I don't know, show off or tragic thing. Something bad's going to happen. There's such a sinister energy. There's such a stressful desperation.
Yeah.
Because every time that I read a classic and it actually stands up to what I think the hype is, you know, like you read The Great Gatsby and you're like, is this going to be as good as everyone says? And you're like, yeah, it actually it is really unbelievable. Is. You read Animal Farm, you read The Bell Jar, whatever. You read these big classics and then they're actually as good as you hoped they would be and as everyone says that they are. It it's so exciting because you also like have now unlocked a piece of culture. You're like, now I'm going to understand every Of Mice and Men joke and every you can now like compare it to other novels and everything. So I, that's one of the reasons I love reading classics, because now I feel like I'm on the inside of this thing. I loved it, and I actually just grabbed this. I'm not going to start reading it right now, but I reminded myself that I bought this great edition of The Grapes of Wrath recently. Well, maybe now it was 2 years ago, but I'm like, gosh, I really want to read this. Like, it might not happen this year because obviously my goal this year is to read 100 books. And so I'm trying to really just be in service of that goal because I'm excited about it. And this is quite a long book. It's 581 pages long of quite small font. And so
this might also not be own the guy. And East of Eden. So I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I want to read them so badly, but I'm like, Maybe
this is your year because you're not trying to read a lot of books. It's so true. Big books might be the time.
If I can accomplish all of my goals and I still have like a few months left, I will definitely read a large book. Like, that'll definitely be my like little treat to myself. Like, yeah, you've got some time.
A little
for this.
Reward.
just a little Steinbeck treat.
I will also say it just reminded me how lucky we are to live in 2024.
Oh my God.
I keep having these reminders of certain things, like the eclipse is one. Like, how lucky are we that we knew it was coming, and that it wasn't just a shock horror, like this horrible, terrible thing happened or whatever. Like, there's so many things that keep coming up in my life where I'm like, God, I'm so, overall, we are so lucky to live now. Mm-hmm. And in the 1930s, when it's just like walking from farm to farm, dreaming about maybe one day we can have ketchup again, I'm like, yep, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I'm so lucky. Wow.
This is all very true.
It's useful reminder.
Yeah.
All right, what did you read next?
Yeah, so speaking of classics, I finished The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells. H.G. Wells was an English writer born in 1866, and he passed away in 1946 at the age of 79. He wrote more than 50 novels, a number of short stories, and nonfiction books about politics, social commentary, history, popular science, among other things. His first novel was The Time Machine, and other notable works include The Island of Dr. Moreau, The War of the Worlds, and The Invisible Man. So, yes, I mentioned this, I want to say maybe a month ago, that I was currently reading it, and then it kind of dropped off the face of the earth because I had so many other things to read. But last week, as I mentioned, I finally finished recording the audiobook that we are going to be releasing as a Patreon exclusive, and it's going to be full of beautiful music that CJ has made, and it's going to be great once I finish post-production on it. So anyway, the book itself, though, this was a reread for me. I first read this, I want to say like maybe 7, 8, something like that, years ago. And I read it because I watched Orphan Black, and it's one of my favorite TV shows, but this book plays a huge part in that because that show is about clones, and this is about messing around, doing experimentation on animals and stuff. So there's a connection. So this book was spooky as heck, for sure. It was like, oh man, okay, I'm entering a dark zone every time I'm reading this book. And because it is about, the main character is this man named Edward Prendick, and he is, basically he was on a boat, and he ends up kind of crash landing on an island. Like, he's stranded, and he ends up on this island. And it's just the worst island to land on, because there's this crazy doctor named Dr. Moreau, and then there's this other guy there with him, and they are basically just experimenting on animals, doing vivisection, like combining animals, like doing weird stuff to them, trying to make them human, trying to see if they can turn an animal into a thinking human being type of situation. So it's really creepy. And
I hate that.
And, you know, of course, Edward Prendick is not supposed to be there. So he's kind of like this outsider who's now like learning too much a little bit. And so you're kind of scared all the time while reading this book, because you just don't really know what's going to happen next. You don't know what's going to happen with the animals, or the beast people, as they call them. And Yeah, spooky stuff, but really, really good.
Okay.
I would definitely say I would prefer reading it not out loud because there are so many difficult words that I had to look up. But all in all, very, very good. I highly recommend it if you want a spooky sci-fi book. Like, this is one of my favorite H.G. Wells books. I haven't read a ton of them, but this is definitely better than War of the Worlds, in my opinion. But
oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really liked it, though, so I'm excited for you guys to listen to the audiobook when it comes out. Because I don't know a lot of people who've read this book. I feel like it's kind of... It is a classic, but I don't know a lot of people who've actually read it. So I'm happy to share it with you guys.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The other book that I read was Don't Go Without Me by Rosemary Valero O'Connell. Rosemary Valero O'Connell is a cartoonist and illustrator born in Minneapolis, raised in Saragossa, Spain, and currently residing in Brooklyn, New York. She received her BFA in comic art from the Minneapolis College of Art and Design in 2016 and has been making comics full-time ever since. She is best known for illustrating Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me. Don't Go Without Me was published in 2020. This one has been on my shelves for a few years now. Not the longest. I see that it's got British pounds on the back of it. I think I bought it at Gosh Comics in the last few years, one of those visits that I was there. And I was really looking forward to it because of the illustration style. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to Rosemary Valero O'Connell through Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me, which I think is just such a phenomenally fantastic graphic novel, and I love her illustration work in it. And so I was like, I can't wait to read another book by her. The illustrations in this book are unbelievable. Like, she is such a talented artist. Every page is a delight, as they say. So beautiful. The details, the colors are so beautiful, like really stripped back. Like the first, there's three stories here. The first one is just peach, brown, and black. Ooh. Like just shades.
Okay,
like
I was going to ask if there was cool color schemes like with Laura.
Yeah, the second one is pink, dark pink, purple, and dark purple. And then the last one is teal, pink, and grays.
Amazing.
Like, so there's really beautiful palettes, these really beautiful, stunning illustrations. It was so beautiful to look at. Maybe I knew when I bought it, but I had forgotten that it was not a graphic novel and that it was actually three short stories. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading this kind of just on a random whim, picked it up, started reading it, and I was in love with the first few pages. I was like, whoa, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. This is so sick. Why are more people not talking about this? This is epic. It reaches the end of the first chapter and I'm like, oh, can't wait to see where this goes next. And then it's like all new characters, all new setting, all new colors. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And I look and it's a short story collection. And I'm like, no, which is again, further proving that maybe I don't like short stories because.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if
you know what I mean?
I feel like if you don't know it's going to be a short story and then it is, that's a little different than like if you had read this when you first bought it and you didn't know that, you might have had a totally different like reading experience.
Maybe. I do think that you're right. Like, I would have had different expectations. I still think that I would have felt disappointed that it ended there because I was really getting into the characters.
Yeah,
I was really getting into the setting. I was really into the story. So it's basically about a world where this couple kind of falls through a portal and now the main character can't find her partner. So she keeps asking these weird alien type fantasy creatures that live on this planet in this parallel type universe. She keeps asking, like, have you seen my partner? And they're like, well, what does she look like? And she's like, oh, she has beautiful brown hair and these gorgeous blue eyes. And they're like, oh, yeah, I think I saw her by the river. So she goes to the river and she asks another person. And then they're like, what does she look like? What's her hair like? And she's like, oh, I don't remember. And it's like really spooky how she is, every time she mentions a detail, which she has to in order to find her, the like little demons take that detail and absorb it for energy. And then she doesn't. And I was like, this is such a cool story. Cool. The second and third story were also good, but I didn't think they were as good as the first story. And overall, I just didn't feel like any of the stories were... I didn't feel like the three stories on like as a little collection were powerful enough. Mm-hmm. I was like, either this would have needed like six stories to really get something going there, yeah. or just I would have preferred one graphic novel throughout. But here's the thing. It was stunning. It was stunning. It's absolutely beautiful. It was kind of sci-fi fantasy-esque.
Yeah, sounds pretty.
So if you're into A Psalm for the Wild Built, for some reason this gave me similar-ish vibes to that as well. I do recommend it. I just wasn't like blown away by it.
I see. I feel like follow up to that, and this is seconding something someone in our live show said yesterday, you should read On a Sunbeam by Tilly Walden.
Right.
Because that is a sci-fi book that has beautiful art, and it's very long, and it's just one story.
What's so funny is that Raylene really wants me to read that, and I owe reading that to you from last year or whatever.
Yeah, because didn't I tell you to read it one time, and then you didn't, and so you got punished
or
something?
Well, I started it. I read like a third of it, and I was not liking it. Oh. And so I'm like, do I go back to it and just not like a book you really liked? I don't know.
I mean, you have to either try reading it or just like get rid of it. Like, if you don't like it, you don't like it. That's fine.
It's true.
But having an expectation just sitting there is not good for you either.
All right. You had one more book that you read.
I do. Yes. I did read Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. Neal Stephenson is an American writer who has written over a dozen novels, which all fall under the sci-fi umbrella. Snow Crash is a political, linguistic, cyberpunk novel that was published in 1992 and was nominated for the Arthur C. Clarke Award in 1994. It follows a pizza delivery man slash hacker named Hero Protagonist in a lawless futuristic version of Los Angeles where people can log into the metaverse where a mysterious digital drug is running rampant. I read this book for my book club with my two friends. So this was a book that I technically picked. I came to the group with three different sci-fi books like 2 months ago when I was really like excited to read a sci-fi book. I was like, pick one of these three and we'll read it. Actually, The Island of Dr. Moreau was one of the other options. And
oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So I was like, let's just read one of these. And they agreed on this one. And I was like, okay, this will be so fun. So this book is kind of like, before I read it, I was like, this sounds like Ready Player One, but from the 90s. And like, just like a different take on that kind of digital world vibe. So I was like, this is going to be so fun. And at the beginning, it was fun. But then it stopped being fun. So at the very beginning, like the main character is this guy named Hero Protagonist. And he is like a self-proclaimed like best swordsman in the world. And he is also a hacker. And he delivers pizza for the mafia. So it's like there's a lot going on. And at the very beginning, he's like trying to deliver this pizza and something goes wrong. And he needs to deliver it in under 30 minutes. And so he's like his life is on the line. And this girl who is like a whole other part of this world is that like there's these people called couriers who like ride around on skateboards and hook onto to cars to travel around and like deliver stuff for people. And so like there's just like a lot going on. It is like at the very beginning, I was actually kind of like stressed by this book because there's like a lot of lingo being thrown at you and you don't know what's happening. And so it was a very good way to start the book. Like it's like you're just starting in the middle of an action sequence in a movie. And it was kind of like, whoa, what's happening? So the beginning was really exciting and trying to like figure out what was going on was really fun. But then for me, it kind of started to just like fall apart and actually get a little bit boring kind of once it got into the meat of the plot, which is that there's this like drug going around and Hero, the main character, is trying to figure out like what it is and how to stop it. And since he's a hacker, he can kind of like hack into the metaverse or whatever and try and figure it out. And once it kind of got into that, it just kind of lost me a little bit. Mm. And there were a couple of side characters that kind of popped in just for like, I want to say, you know, like five pages here and there. And I liked those characters like 100 times more than I liked the actual main characters. And so anytime I was like reading about this random dog, like and what his thoughts were, I was like, oh, tell me more about Fido. I really like him. And like just random side characters that didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. And so it just didn't work for me. And I spent a couple of hours yesterday just kind of like speeding through the end because I just wanted it to be over. But it was kind of funny when I first started it, I had just finished reading Eve Babbitt's and I was like, I'm feeling so good about this Los Angeles, like 70s vibe and like kind of female energy. And then this was like the opposite of that. It was just like digital male energy, but it's set in Los Angeles. And so I was able to like connect myself to that a little bit. But it's like not real LA. It's basically like a weird version of LA where there's no laws and like everything is crazy. So I was happy about the connection, but it didn't really follow through, unfortunately. So unfortunately, that was a bit of a dud read for me.
Did you meet with your book club about it yet?
No, we're going to be meeting up this week. to talk about it.
Okay.
And pick our next
I'm
read.
Curious what they think.
Yeah, I'm intrigued too, because I'm like, this doesn't seem like their type of book. Now that I've read it, I'm like, ooh, I don't know.
Okay, but you said you're excited about what you're currently reading, so maybe let us, what's that about?
Yes, so yesterday I finished this book and I was like, I need to just start something that's going to be awesome. And so what I did was, I also couldn't decide what I wanted to read, so I did the classic thing. I was like, Kyle, what do I do? And he was like, pick four books and come to me. I'll narrow it down to two books for you. And I was like, oh, okay. Cool. So I came to him with four books. I'm actually recording a reading vlog for this. So once I'm done the book, it'll come out for the patrons. But a long story short, I ended up picking Colorless, Tsukuru Tazuki and His Years of Pilgrimage by Haruki Murakami. So I am 42 pages into this. So I just kind of started it yesterday. I just dipped my toes in. But I am already in love with this book. Like, I am already loving it so much. So the main character is this guy named Tsukuru Tazuki. And he is, at the time that the book takes place, he's 34. But he's kind of reflecting on something that happened to him when he was in college, when he was 20 years old. He had this really close-knit group of friends. It was him and four other people. And they were like, the five of them were just the tightest. They did everything together. But then he moved away for college. They all stayed in their hometown, but he moved away to Tokyo. And then a few years later, they suddenly say, we don't want to be friends with you anymore. And they just totally cut him off. I know. It's very stressful situation.
Very so, Banshees of Inisherin.
I know. I was like, wait, this is perfect. This is the vibe. I love it. And so that's all I've really gotten so far. And now I think it's just going to be about him like reflecting on that and trying to figure out why it happened, because at the time that it happened, he didn't really dig deeper. And so I think that the book might be about him reflecting on that and how it kind of helps him move forward into life. But it's so good. Every time I read a Murakami book, I'm just like, why am I not always reading a Murakami book? Mm. But the problem is they will run out eventually. And that's what I'm scared of. So I think that's why.
There's like 19 though, right?
I know. There's, I do so have a lot. Many. I own like at least 12 that I haven't read.
Yeah, you could read one for the next 12 years.
It's true. I just don't want to. I don't want to zip through them too fast. But the nice thing is he is still writing. It's not like Orwell for you, where you're like, you've got what you've got and you're stuck with that. But yeah, I'm loving it and I'm so excited to keep reading it. And this is one of the books on my 24 in 24 TBR. So I'm trying to hop back into that. So is Eve Babbitt's, actually. So I've now knocked off 5 out of my 24. So I still have some catching up to do. but
still, that's, you're, I'm back on my way. Track, I think.
I'm on my journey.
You're on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so I'm in the middle of two things. I have 3 hours left of the audiobook version of The Riddles of the Sphinx by Anna Shechtman. So I hauled this one a couple of weeks ago. This was one of my like anticipated books of the year. I found out about Anna Shechtman like a year or two ago, a couple years ago. She is a really cool, and I'm annoyed that I don't remember the word because it comes in a crossword. It's, what is it called when you make a crossword? It's like, it's, there's a crazy word for it, crucibilist or something, but also just a like a crossword constructor, I think is the word. But yeah, so she makes crosswords, and that's how I found her, because I had done a couple of her crosswords and I was like, oh, these are really good. And I looked her up, and then I found this whole world of crossword making. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is so neat. And then I found out she had a book coming out that was about the history of crosswords and everything. And I was like, this sounds great. I am unfortunately not liking this very much.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's actually like a tragedy. And I am going to listen to the very end because I really want to give it a shot.
Yeah.
And I can see there are certain moments where I'm like liking it, but very academic. I'm almost wondering if this was written as her PhD project. Which is a classic, because she's an assistant professor in the Department of Literatures and English at Cornell. So I'm like, so this, it would line up if this was her PhD project.
Right.
So she's kind of talking about two things with her. It's like a mixture of memoir and history. Mm-hmm. The memoir-y part is about how she got into crosswords and like her journey with crosswords, but also a lot about her eating disorder and how twisted those two things became and how she thinks that they're similar and how they're different. Like writing crossword puzzles and her obsession with it and her eating disorder and everything she went through with that. So those are really interesting. I don't see the connection as much as she sees, seems to see it. Yeah. She's like, which is just like my eating disorder. And then she'll talk about it for a while. And I'm like, I don't see the connection, but I do find it interesting. Right. Like, she's obviously really clever and really smart and very insightful. And so I enjoy, like, the passages, well, when she's talking about something that she cares a lot about or went through. But I don't, so she keeps hopping back and forth between those two things, and I just don't see the connection at all.
Totally. So like, this is, you're expecting it to be a book about crosswords, like, completely, and then there's kind of this extra element that doesn't necessarily track.
That's the memoir-y part, but then there's also the history part. And she is kind of going through, and she chooses, I think there's 4 or 5 women throughout history that were important to the crossword puzzle. Mm-hmm. And again, when she's actually in it, and she's like explaining to me who this person was, and like, they were the first person to publish books of crosswords, and they were really interesting. I'm like, okay, I'm learning about this person. But then it gets into a segment where Anna Schechtman is talking about how she personally relates to this person. And, and it just feels like there's 4 different things going on, and I don't see how they come together. It feels like a little bit of a mess. And I like the elements on their own. Like, I wish that she'd written a book about crossword, like the history of crosswords, mm-hmm. and then a second book on her relationship with crosswords and a memoir of how she became a crosswordist and all of that sort of stuff. And but I'm just not seeing how they all tie together at all. There's also, this is the final element that is like my least favorite, is she's clearly very interested in psychoanalysis, and like, she talks about Freud a lot, but also other theorists like Lacan and Zizek and people who I read in university and I don't want to hear about ever again. And I'm just like, yeah. And then it's like listening to the audiobook and I'm like, it's been an hour since we talked about crosswords.
So it has too many things going on, not enough focus, sounds like the problem.
That's what it seems like. I feel like there isn't a lot of focus going on, and it's just a lot of different elements. And so I'm just bummed, because there's certain aspects of the book that I'm really liking, but overall it's just not working together me. Right.
That is,
so I
want to
finish it, but it is the worst. The other thing that I'm starting is called My Name is Lucy Barton by Elizabeth Strout. So my Kobo tells me I am 10% of the way through it, and that was just in one quick sitting. I think I read for like half an hour something. Nice. And I was like, whoa, this is really good. The reason that I picked that book up is because I was like in the mood to read something really good. I felt like before or after I finished Of Mice and Men? No, it was after, but I felt like I haven't read a contemporary book that I've really liked this year. It feels that way. I was feeling dramatic, but I was like, come on, what do I have to read? And so I just asked our Discord. I was like, guys, help, please. Like, I was like, I would love your recommendations for books that you think that I will love, hopefully like a 5-star prediction type thing. Mm-hmm. Can you give me a 5-star prediction for something that is short and quick, and you bonus points if you think I already own it? It's okay if I don't, though, because I could look on my library. Mm-hmm. And I got a bunch of great recommendations, but this one came from Pepper. Pepper says, I have a terrible memory, but these are short books I know I really liked. Maybe not 5 stars, but definitely 4. I like that as well. The honesty is good. They recommended a couple books, and My Name is Lucy Barton was on them. And then Tim responded to that one and says, I love the Lucy Barton books. Elizabeth Strout has been one of my favorite authors lately, and I've read almost her entire backlist in the last few years. Most of her books are short, but they're also very powerful. There's something about them that keeps me coming back for more. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll take a shot. And I saw if my library had it, and it did. And so I'm reading this, and I'm really liking it so far. If I end up giving it 4 or 5 stars, I will definitely be awarding Pepper with a certified reader pin badge, because I think that would be a lot of fun. So this is what I'm in the middle of.
Awesome.
Now. All right, everyone. Well, it's time to do something I haven't done in a while, but I'm excited to do today. Book news. So, speaking of our Discord, we have a book news channel in there.
Yeah.
And people from time to time will pop in cool stuff that they see. And I just felt like over the last few weeks, I had noticed a lot of cool things being dropped in there. I was like, I need to do a little catch up with book news. Yeah. The people need to know. So I've got some cool stuff here, Aileen.
Okay, let's hear it.
First of all, Lily Gladstone, which we all now know from Killers of the Flower Moon, Lily Gladstone to star in the movie adaptation of The Memory Police by Yoko Ogawa.
Ooh.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
I didn't know they were making a movie version
Me
of that.
Me neither, but I feel like that could be really neat.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by that. Gonna have to look into that more. Here's another similar one. Amy Adams and Jenna Ortega will star in Taika Waititi's Clara and the Sun.
Ooh, okay, I'm into all of that.
That's fascinating.
That all sounds very cool.
Oh, this was kind of personal to me. Like, I knew that someone was just linking this to me, but then I was like, you know, I think I'll tell everyone
it's
about
news.
It. Harvard Press is launching and publishing a book called The Letters of Emily Dickinson. I don't know exactly when it's coming out, but I think it's coming out this year. And it's a collection of her letters. Cool. And I love letters. And I know I've somehow convinced a bunch of you to read letters. So if you like Emily Dickinson, perfect. Oh, this one was very one towards you, Raylene.
Okay.
I think I saw you comment on this, but it is the 50th anniversary of Carrie by Stephen King.
Yes.
And they have published a new and very beautiful edition of it.
Yeah, I totally called it.
You totally called it.
I knew this was going to happen.
Were you saying that you wanted to buy a new copy, but you were going to wait?
Kind of where I was at was that I really wanted a nice, like, trade paperback of Carrie, but it doesn't exist. And I was,
yes,
I was just thinking they're probably waiting for the 50th anniversary to make a nice edition. I still don't understand why they don't have a nice trade paperback, but whatever. I ended up buying, like, a vintage mass market version of it, which I also really like. I wanted to either get a beautiful trade or just, like, a grungy little paperback that kind of fit the vibe. So I have it, so I don't need to get it, but it is cool. It is pretty.
My edition is insane. It's like purple
with
and
the skull.
And like, it's got a skull.
It's hideous.
On it.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I literally don't understand how one of the most famous horror books of our generation has it's insane.
It should have a really cool cover.
Yeah, now it has this really cool cover. It's very beautiful, and it has an introduction by Margaret Atwood, which is neat.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, Turtles All the Way Down officially has a trailer and a release date.
Mm.
This is exciting because this movie was filmed years and years ago.
Oh, really?
But it got caught up. Yeah, it got caught in a bunch of hell.
Oh.
You know? Like,
yeah,
wasn't going to get released, was going to get canceled, all that sort of stuff. Huh. But now it is being released on May 2nd.
Oh, wow.
So we are mere weeks away. It's on, I think, HBO Max.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe Crave in Canada?
Yeah, intriguing. I'll watch it.
Intriguing. Raylene and I actually watched the trailer together a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it looks kind of weird.
It looks kind of strange. We're like, well, mainly we were confused by the song choice.
Yeah.
It felt like they just used Billie Eilish because Billie Eilish is really famous, but it like was totally
it
the wrong
It did not
mood.
Fit at all.
We were very confused about it, but it looks good. Like, it looks like well made
everything.
So we'll definitely be giving that shot for sure. Okay, next up. This is exciting. Brenna Thumler is on September 10th. A collector's edition box of all three of the trilogy, Sheets, Delicates, and Lights, will be available in a beautiful box set. So if you have been waiting to buy the Sheets trilogy, maybe this is the thing that you should do. Get the cool box set, because that sounds really cool. And then the final piece of news that I have here for today is Sally Rooney's new novel has been announced.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
This is exciting for the people because obviously there's a lot of big Sally Rooney fans out there. The new book is called Intermezzo.
Cool.
Do I know what that means? Do you know what that means?
I mean, no. It makes me think mezzanine. Does it have anything to do with that? I don't know.
Wikipedia says in music, an intermezzo is in the most general sense is a composition which fits between other musical or dramatic entities, such as acts of a play or movements of a larger musical work.
Oh, that's cool. So it's like intermission.
Yeah. But a
cooler word for it.
But a cooler word.
Is the book about music? It must be.
It says it will feature Rooney's trademark theme of complicated relationships between young people, but this time the focus will be between two brothers, Peter and Ivan.
Okay.
Ooh, one of them's a chess player, one of them's a lawyer. When their father dies, the brothers' lives change. I'm not seeing anything about music.
Interesting. Okay. We'll see what she does. We'll see where she goes with that.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how this goes, because I find Sally Rooney's career fascinating. Mm-hmm. I've only read Normal People.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, and I didn't really like
it. Me neither.
So,
I know, I feel like I don't know if I'm on her wavelength, but I'm still intrigued to see what she'll do.
You know what it was for me, Raylene? She doesn't use quotation marks.
I know,
and you know how much that drives me crazy.
Yeah, I listened to Normal People as an audiobook, and I felt very separated from it the whole time I was listening to it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Have you tried the show?
No, not yet. I would like to, though.
No, me neither.
I want to give it a try, because I really like Daisy What's-Her-Face.
She's cool. She's going to be starring in Twister, too.
Yeah, I saw that trailer, and I was like, this looks fun.
I love Twister. The first movie, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh my gosh.
I'm always trying to get people to watch Twister with me.
That's so funny. It's such a sick I've been meaning movie. To rewatch it for a long time, so I'll watch it with you.
It holds up. Yeah, it really holds up. Cool. The final thing I wanted to mention was that there's a lot of awards news sort of going on right now, because we're in the middle of awards season. The Women's Prize shortlist is out. The International Booker shortlist is out. There was, I think, Canada Reads and the Girl Prize stuff happened recently. So basically, I think I'm going to wait until the end of award season, and then I want to do a book news with like a bunch of just here is everyone who won kind of a thing. I think that'd be fun.
Very nice.
So there we go. That was fun to do a book news. Haven't done one in a while. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to finish off this episode with the mailroom. How about you start us off, Raylene? What did you find?
Yeah, so I'm starting off with a very interesting question from Haley, who leaves us so many good comments. Haley says, this one is for you. This was left on your most recent video on Patreon where you organized your bookshelves, I think. So Haley says, have you ever considered tracking your reading by page count instead of books read? I've always thought that this would be a way better system because it gives more accurate information on how much has actually been read. It also means that you aren't choosing books just because they are small and will count as another book. I suffer from this too. If you had the goal to read X amount of pages, you would be more free to read whatever you wanted. On the flip side, if you read 100 books this year, but they are all really short YA or graphic novels, is that actually increasing your reading in the way you wanted? Just food for thought. So, I mean, I guess maybe you can have a comeback for that.
A comeback.
How do you respond?
I don't want to, I don't judge anyone's way that they want to read. I definitely think of books as small entities, though, and the idea of spanning over pages seems really counterintuitive to the way that books work. It's a book has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It is one entity. It is one object. It is someone's vision and item that they're sharing with you. The idea of being like, this isn't a book, it's 300 pages, it feels really weirdly soulless to me. Like, you've separated out the idea of the book as an object, and now you're literally just counting pages. And it's fascinating, because I feel like she's saying that would make it feel more soulful. So I feel, for some reason, I'm feeling very much the opposite. Because now we're literally just talking about a number. It doesn't matter what I fill those pages up with.
But also, is the number 100, like, in terms of reading 100 books, is that kind of empty as well? If you're just reading, like, imagine you're just reading a bunch of magazines or something. I don't know. Like, if you're just reading only graphic novels for the entire year, like, will that feel like you've accomplished what you wanted to accomplish? I think that's mainly the question here.
I think that's a fair question. I think that if I was radically changing the type of books that I was reading for this challenge, then I think that would be valid criticism. But I am not. Like, we've looked at what I'm reading, mm-hmm. and I'm reading the exact same kind of books that I normally read. Yeah. I gravitate towards literary fiction, graphic novels, translated fiction. Those are the books that I read every year, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what I'm still reading. I'm reading classics. So I haven't changed the style of books that I'm reading. I really am just reading more of them.
That's good. That's good. I know for me personally, there was one year where I read like 120 books, but like 50 or 60 of those were manga. And yeah. at the end of the year, I was like, I felt a little bit like, oh, I didn't do what I wanted to do. Like, I had all these other novels that I wanted to read, and I like avoided them just yeah. to read something that was faster. So I do understand where Haley's coming from, and I do think it's interesting. I just don't know what page count I would like choose. I don't even know what... Like,
yeah, what's my average page count?
Right? So that would be
an interesting stat for us to look at. Like,
I have been counting my page
to go back.
I do have pages for books on my spreadsheet now. So at the end of the year, I'll be able to see how many pages I've read.
Okay, maybe we should do that. Because remember last time we were excited to see how many books we'd read at the end of the, or books we bought at the end of the quarter compared to last quarter? Yeah. Let's do that for pages this time. At the end of this quarter, so halfway through the year, let's look at our average page count read in 6 months, and we can compare it to last year. That's I'll just go idea. Through and add that info. That sounds fun.
I do love that. So that was the main comment I wanted to talk about, but we also had this funny one from Turnip Parsnip, who... there's a photo included, which we won't share, but they just said, I joined the Discord just to contribute to the Yorkshire tea discussion, because if Yorkshire tea has a million fans, then I'm one of them. If Yorkshire tea has one fan, then I'm that one. If Yorkshire tea has no fans, then I no longer exist. And it's a picture of them holding the biggest bag of tea I've ever seen. And this, it just made me laugh. I really wanted to give that a shout out, because you've got a Yorkshire tea buddy over there with Turnip Parsnip.
It's incredible. It's just incredible. I saw that photo. It's like she's just, it's like half her size.
Yeah, it's like torso. It's a torso sized bag of tea. It's just impeccable.
It's beautiful.
I loved it.
That's just beautiful.
What have you got?
Okay, I pulled some comments from YouTube. Ella says, my partner and I have decided to do the quarterly updates alongside you guys. We both love the pod, and when we woke up at 3 a.m. and couldn't get back to sleep, we decided it was better time than any. We were exhausted, but satisfied. I just think that that is like peak romance. It's like 3 a.m. You're both laying there. You're like, damn, I can't fall asleep. Want to talk about our book stats?
That's
yes,
beautiful.
I do. That's a marriage built to last.
That's all I ever want.
This one from Jilly says, you talked about having a special section on the truck for books recommended by Raylene. So I talked about how I want to have a section on the books that's like books my best friend recommends, and I'll just have whatever Raylene tells me to put
there.
But Jilly says, I'd love for you to revisit Books Unbucket, episode number 77, Dream Bookstore Display Tables for the book truck. Do any of those still apply?
That's funny.
And I was like, whoa, throwback, because what, maybe 2 years ago, we recorded a mini podcast episode for the Patreon, and we'll link that. We can just make that one available to everyone.
Sure,
so we'll link that to everyone, so anyone who wants to, we'll open that one up for free, can go back and listen to what the hell did we say?
I have no idea.
So you and I will have to go back and listen to that
That's
as well,
too funny.
But I do remember we did this. Somebody had asked us, like, if you could set up a table, what would it be?
Right. Gosh,
I should clearly
I'm excited
to myself.
I'm excited to listen to that again.
That's awesome. We got this comment from Elizabeth McIntosh. Ariel was not lying about that biscuit tea. 10 out of 10. I just, the people have really...
There was a lot of discussion about the tea the past
couple
weeks.
There's a lot of solidarity there. But then I got this important comment about the tea, okay?
Okay.
Mad for Mars Bars. A PSA for any Aussies. They stock the multi biscuit tea at Coles and Woolworths. Don't know what those places are, but this is important for the Australians to know. But also, highly recommend drinking the tea with oat milk. I tried it with cow's milk and the flavor just didn't hit as hard. The oat milk really brings out that biscuity flavor.
Nice.
This is fascinating to me because I've been drinking oat milk for the last decade or whatever. Well, not decade. 6 years. 6 years maybe? And so any tea I've experienced in the last 6 years has been with oat milk.
Yeah, same.
And I didn't think about how that might be a contributing factor to the delicious power of the digestive biscuit tea.
Very good.
So if you're not feeling it, maybe it's because of the oat milk. Fascinating. Patricia Wolfram says, I was given sourdough starter as a wedding shower gift.
That's amazing.
Love that.
I literally just was making sourdough this morning. We're baking it later today. So yes. Timely discussion.
Super cool. And the final one, this was just very sweet. Kat Reads a Bunch says, I told one of my friends about the pod a while ago, and she just told me today that she's been listening to it ever since. This makes me so happy. Love you guys. We love you too, Kat.
That's wonderful.
And we love your friend as well. Thank you all for listening and for, you know, leaving us comments and messages and stuff. I do feel like we have such a lovely community.
We do.
This podcast. We feel really lucky. So we are now going to go and record our Patreon mini podcast, The Question Vase, where we do a Q&As. See what we did there. That'll be fun. If you want to check it out, it's on our Patreon. Reminder again that our cute peachy hats are available now. I know you've been staring at Raylene this whole time thinking, how can I look that cool?
Yeah.
It's easy. You just buy the hat.
Easy peasy.
You can do it. All right. Thank you guys so much. We will talk to you next time.